News with Nick, March 15th, 2018. I am doing a show. It is my first time doing a regular show for quite a while, and I'm also got the new mixer going, so I can play some music, and I can turn it up, and I can turn it down, and up and down. Very impressive, folks. Now, Levelator probably took that input and completely screwed it up for the post show, so it actually doesn't sound like I turned it up or down at all. So we got that going for me. Running the mixer with my left hand, running the mouse with my right hand. And how's everyone doing? It is a great show. March 15th, 2018. You guys hear about it's a new bridge. It's actually going in at a FIU. Not sure what FIU is, but let's find out.
For students, Florida University, International University.
Florida International University, so we've learned that. They've announced a new bridge. It's going in.
Uses its plan to make crossing Southwest 8th Street less risky. The school and the city of Sweetwater unveiled plans for a new pedestrian bridge today.
Its necessity illustrated by a student's death over the weekend. CBS4's Maribel Rodriguez has more tonight from FIU.
So this was several months ago. They came out with some new information on the bridge. And it's very important that we put this in so that kids will stop dying.
We use this crosswalk all the time.
For FIU and the city of Sweetwater, safety is a priority. In 2012, they were awarded an $11.4 million grant for the construction of a state-of-the-art 320-foot-long pedestrian bridge over 8th Street, offering a safer route for students and locals. And in 2016, they broke ground.
This was a miracle, really, in process. It was a combination between the city of Sweetwater, a FIU, Florida Department of Transportation, South Florida Water Management, and Florida Department of Transportation to be able to get this project off the ground.
Very exciting. So they are super excited about this bridge. Let's go on over to another video where they were announcing how great this bridge is going.
Right now, we're in the process of moving the span that goes over 8th Street with what it's called an SPMT. It's a self-performed modular transport.
Oh, by the way, this bridge, it was built, and then they moved it into place. They didn't build it in place. They built it somewhere and then moved it into place.
Which essentially it lifts the span from underneath. It's going to take approximately 5 to 6 hours.
With Sweetwater reflects our attitude that we want to be part of the solution. We want to help. We want to bring people in. Mm. We're inclusive. Mm. That's who we are at FIU.
They're so excited about this bridge. So it's one side of the campus, just connects to the other side of the campus over a highway so people have to stop running across the street. Big whoop-de-doo. Several dead in bridge collapse at Florida International University. A newly installed pedestrian bridge connecting the campus of Florida International University with the city of Sweetwater west of Miami collapsed Thursday, crushing several cars on the roadway below. He said the spokesman for the police said the bridge was still under construction. It was not open to pedestrians. This is breaking right now. There are currently people in cars under the bridge.
I want to take you now to Miami, where we're watching this collapse. You're seeing this is the larger wide shot here of a bridge collapse near Florida International University. There are some cars that have been trapped underneath this bridge collapse. They're trying to get some of the people out. They were able to rescue some folks and take them over to a nearby trauma center. Our understanding is that this bridge opened back in September, back on Saturday, just a few days ago.
Yeah, it wasn't even open, actually. So the pedestrian bridge was put into place, was not even open. And the latest news that we're getting is that the bridge was undergoing a stress test during, like, rush hour. Not rush hour, but during the middle of the day while cars were still under it. They're like, let's stress test it. Now, this is all still breaking news, so we don't have all of the information coming in yet. However, it's like someone pulled on the cable too hard, and it's like, ooh, I guess it failed the stress test. This is really embarrassing. Can you imagine being the guys that are like, ooh, whoops, we built that, and now it's collapsed. Or I wonder if there's just one guy who's like, oh, I knew I forgot the cables. And then he's just not going to say anything. I have no memory.
And it was allowed to be opened. The folks were driving through this area, and then that's when this collapse took place. It's about 170 feet. It's 950-ton section of this that was built. And as you can see, that entire street has now been closed off to traffic as they're trying to
sort of... So we're not going to get any new information from that. Let's see if there's anything new on the live stream.
involved some of the cabling associated with this bridge. And we have since seen that photo that has made its way across Twitter that shows the minutes before the structure gave way. You can see workers atop of that bridge, and we're told that shortly right after that bridge gave way, that apparently some of these workers may have even jumped out of the way to get out of all.
Oh, my goodness. So we're going to be hearing a lot of stories in the next couple days about people who are, like, under the bridge. It's like, it's come down on me, and I had to dig my way out using my claws and my mouth. And unfortunately, there are cars under there currently that the recovery people are going to get to, and they're going to find some, like, baby meat or something. I'm not sure. But it's not good. It's not good. So this is the fresh news out of the day. Bridge collapse in Florida. Stephen Hawking died at his home in Cambridge this week on March 14th, 2018. Actually, this is yesterday. His family stated that he died peacefully. He was eulogized on social media by So Stephen Hawking, of course, the theoretical physicist who rode around in his wheelchair, flew out into space, is now riding with the Tesla Roadster, I guess they would say. And the level one joke, of course, is, hey, Stephen, do you have any final words before you die? And he goes, yes. Right? Stupid. I didn't know that Stephen Hawking spoke at the 2012 Paralympic Games. So here's he speaking. Of course, he's not speaking. It's his computer speaking.
The Paralympic Games is also about transforming our perception of the world. We are all different. There is no such thing as a standard or run-of-the-mill human being, but we share the same human spirit. What is important is that we have the ability to create. This creativity can take many forms, from physical achievement to theoretical physics.
Okay, so he talks for another 40 seconds or so.
Friendship and respect.
There's no shots of him, though. Like, it's just an aerial shot. Do they not show him because he's so disgusting? They only show him from the back? It's like, Stephen Hawking, you are so ugh. I cannot look at you, and you can only talk through that computer. Now, I wonder why he never changed up the voice. Because back in when I was in middle school, we had this program that you could type stuff into, and you could make it say stuff, and it was amazing and hilarious. Now, text-to-speech technology has gotten a lot better since then, and you've got a lot of different voices you can choose, and Amazon has some of their own called, and then you can pick, like, male or female. I'd, like, mix it up every day. I'm like, hello, I am here at work now. It's like, Steven, is that you? No, it is not. I know it's you. It's a computer. No one else talks into a computer. I wonder if during Halloween, like, if he was someone else, he just switched the voice over, like, Steven, what are you for Halloween? He's like, I'm another voice. Hey, it's me, out of town guy, for Halloween. Cool. So that's me wondering about Stephen Hawking's thing. Speaking of Amazon and their features, I can't stop thinking about AWS, and it's really taken over my mind. So back in Thanksgiving, the old month of Thanksgiving. I rented a class online about AWS, which is a cloud computing thing, cloud computing architecture run by Amazon, right? So I took this class, and you can actually take a certification. It's $150. And you sign up, and you got to pass all these questions to get Amazon certified. So I'm like, all right, I'll figure out where the testing facilities are. Weirdly enough, the testing facility for Amazon is at the airport in town. So I'm like, okay, I'll just head on over to the airport and take a test. So I go in. By the way, I've read, like, Amazon's documentation. Like, when you get there, you may be asked to turn out your pockets to prove you have no electronic devices on you. Blah, 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 blah. Right? So I get there, and it's just an old guy running the airport, of course. And he's like, oh, you're here for the test? All right, we got to log you in here. You don't have any electronics, right? I'm like, I have my watch, but it's not a smartwatch. He's like, oh, that's good. I have to check that, too. I was, like, pointing out to him what he has to check on me. Like, search me. I don't have any electronics. I can't cheat on the test. So then they put me in this other room, and he's like, the room is video surveillanced. And I go, okay, fine. So I take the test. It is very stressful. because I spent $150 and I really don't want to fail this thing, but it's getting dicey for a bit. I can tell, you know, you can tell on tests if you're breezing through it or if you're like, uh-oh, I'm not really sure of a lot of these answers. So I'm getting all the way to the end and I'm really not sure. And what they do is right at the end, they give you the last question, the 55th question, and then they go, that's the last question. I'm super stressed. And then they go, now, please take a 5-question survey on your experience. And I go, what? No! So I click through the survey as quick as possible because I'm so nervous about the results. And then I click through, and the next screen says, congratulations. You are now certified. I go, oh, thank God. I like start celebrating, and then I'm like, is anyone watching on the camera, I wonder? The guy just took his test, and I wonder if they're watching to be like, is he sad or happy? Anyway, it's very exciting. What ended up happening was I got like a 70 out of 100, 70%, and I think the passing grade is 70. But I am now certified, and so please pay me money to set up your cloud infrastructure. It's very exciting. So Stephen Hawking spoke at the Paralympics. That was back in 2012, which is very fitting because the Paralympics are now going on right now in, where was it? It's not Rio. Oh, South Korea, right. And I was trying to look up some Paralympic highlights to see what was going on. I did see some wheelchair curling where they just push the little puck along. And a lot of the wheelchair curling games are real shutout, like real blowouts. Some of those wheelchair chairs are better than others, but I did look up some hockey highlights. Winter
Games. We are braced. We are ready. Who?
So in Paralympic hockey, it is not people on skates. It is just people sitting on metal sleds.
Will be the victors. Brody Roy.
And they have two sticks, and they use the back of, they have two sticks, that one for each hand. And they use the back of the sticks to propel themselves along the ground. And then they use the front of the stick to hit the puck.
And Brody Roybal, Brody Roybal, goal after goal. And
so it's just basically a bunch of guys with no legs. Also, some of them have legs, they just don't work. And they're sitting in not wheelchairs, but metal sleds.
Stunner.
And it's very, like, you could bash the front of that metal sled into someone's face. After. And it would kill them.
Stunner. Welcome to Pyeongchang 2018.
Right here, you're going to feed across to McGregor. He scores. Oh, it took a couple touches, but it's a power play goal for Canada.
Yeah, it's crazy. You've got two sticks, so you can hit the puck with either of your fins, let's call them. That's pretty cool. Any more information?
Believe it! You saw it! It happened! Whoa. That quick! That sweet! It was poetry in motion!
Oh, yeah, so that's crazy. Not anything near as crazy as the Summer Paralympic Games that we saw last time we covered this, but I just wanted to cover the Paralympic Games. And they've got the biathlon. So the biathlon, instead of sledding, is just... Oh, wait. Oops. Instead of sledding, it's just like a guy sitting on a chair, and then the chair legs are skis. And he skis along. Next story. So how's everyone doing? Sorry, that's just filler thing that I say when I'm still pulling something up. How's everyone doing? Are you guys all dumb? Don't listen to me. Why am I even doing a show? Can we be done yet? The Cornell University fraternity has been put on probation for 2 years for setting up a lewd game called the Pig Roast, in which pledges would rack up points by having sex with heavier women. This is a bit of an older story, but it's still funny. And by older, I mean earlier this year. Members of the Zeta, Beta, Tau were told not to discuss their contest with the women they slept with, according to a new university report. In the event of a tie of the game, the would-be brother who slept with the woman who weighed the most would win, the report revealed. So, of course, I have the report. The university's fraternity and sorority review board determined that the chapter was in violation of the university's fraternity and sorority recognition policy, Section E17B, will not implement or tolerate hazing as defined by the campus code of conduct in any form at any time. The board also found the chapter was in violation of Cornell's fraternity and sorority expectations of membership, Section 11. The fraternity or sorority will not tolerate or condone any form of sexually abusive behavior on the parts of its members, whether physical, mental, or emotional. This is to include any actions which are demeaning to any person or persons, including but not limited to Jews. Wait, this doesn't say that. Huh? It's found that an investigation concluded that as of January 8, 2018, members of the fraternity could accumulate points by engaging in sexual intercourse with women. The contest was referred to as a pig roast. In the event of a tie, additional points were awarded to the new member who had sex with a woman who weighed the most. So wait, it doesn't say that you win by having sex with the fattest girls. This says you get points by engaging with sexual intercourse with women, period. So, like, any? But then if it was a tie, the fattest won? In the event of a tie, additional points were awarded to the new member who had sex with the woman who weighed the most. But how would you know? Did you have to take a photo of their scale? Hey, can you get under scale? But then again, you could cheat by giving them some weights, right? So maybe you had to get the girl into the fraternity to get on a scale. That wouldn't make any sense. Now, if you were just going for quantity rather than anything else, and you did want to win, yeah, you would probably bang the fatters, right? And then I guess the fattest one wins. I don't know. Like, how could you even prove you banged her, though? Like, what if she was so fat you couldn't even? I don't know. Well, anyway, Cornell University fraternity in trouble for that. National school walkout. Thousands protest against gun violence across the U.S. This happened yesterday. A month ago, hundreds of teenagers ran for their lives in the hallways and classrooms of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, where 17 students and staff had been shot to death. On Wednesday, driven by the conviction that they should never have to run from guns again, they walked. So did their peers. In New York City, in Chicago, in Atlanta, in Santa Monica, at Columbine, and at Newton, and in many more cities and towns, students left the school by the hundreds and the thousands at 10 a.m., sometimes in defiance of school authorities who seemed divided and even flummoxed about how to handle their emptying classrooms. Well, this is a very dramatic story.
Not guns! Not guns! Not guns!
We're coming. We're part of many walkouts that are happening across the nation. We're going to do 17 minutes for every life lost in the Stoneman shooting, and then we're going to do an extra minute for Cortland, who was the newest victim of gunfire.
Stupid! So they walk out, and they go, we're walking out, and we're going to stand for silence for 17 minutes, 1 minute for every kid who was shot in Florida. That's crazy! I would be so bored. It should be 17 seconds at the most. And so here's the other thing I learned yesterday. Did you guys know that this is the biggest school shooting, this Florida thing, in a high school since Columbine? That means Columbine held the record for almost 20 years. Oh, it was 1999. So yeah, way longer than I expected. I thought the record had been broken, but school shooting for high schools, this was the biggest one. I don't know if that's like something to be like, oh yeah. That OG Columbine held a record I didn't know about, but because Virginia Tech obviously beat them a while ago. Oh my God, I shouldn't word things this way, but like did more, right? Oh boy, I'm.
We hope.
I'm gonna skip ahead. So everyone just walked out of their school. So we're getting a lot of different reports from across the country of what actually happened. Now, a lot of schools did a thing where they said, hey, students, we hear you're going to walk out of school. So how about we set up a little area where you can come and we can all hang out and that'll be the walkout and we'll learn about protests. And they went, oh, OK, sure. That's not the point of a walkout. You're supposed to be mad. You're supposed to be asleep. In Florida, where students from Stoneman Douglas High School and other schools had rallied in the Capitol, the governor signed a bill last week that raised the minimum age to purchase a firearm to 21 and extended the waiting period to 3 days. On a national level, the students have not had the same impact. This week, President Trump abandoned gun control proposals that the Republican-led Congress had never even inched toward supporting. But for one day at least, the students commanded the country's airwaves, Twitter feeds, and Snapchat stories. So let's see what happened locally in my town. With police presence on campus, more than 150 Keene High School students walked out of class Wednesday as part of a national movement. It was a response to the Valentine's Day school shooting in Parkland, Florida, that left 17 students dead and staff. Just before 10 a.m., students filed out of the back of Keene High and onto the practice field, huddling in groups to hide from the cold. Yeah, it's cold, you idiots. It's like, hey, guys, we're just going to do a walk. It's like the schools have just gone along with it. So it's not even that exciting. It's like way more exciting if the school's like, no, you can't walk out. What are you talking about? But nope, every student, every teacher was like, yeah, let's do it, because the teachers are liberal too. So they're like, sure, my students are walking out. I'll just let them walk out. And we'll just hang out in the thing. What if I wanted to walk out for pro-gun? Like, they'd never let me do that. Hey, I'm not in high school, but what if a bunch of kids did want to walk out for pro-gun rights? I don't know. Feels like that wouldn't be met with the same type of niceness. Martin Shkreli sentenced to 7 years in prison. He says, this is my fault. The notorious farmer bro Martin Shkreli made a sob-filled plea for leniency but ended up getting sentenced Friday to 7 years in prison for federal fraud charges related to hedge funds and a drug company he once ran. So this is the guy who raised the price of the HIV drugs. He's not getting arrested for raising the price of the HIV drugs. However, he was in court and he was at sentencing and he was apparently very upset. He says, the one person to blame for me being here today is me. He told Shkreli told a judge before she imposed the prison term in Brooklyn federal court. Not the government. There is no conspiracy to take me down. I took down Martin Shkreli with my disgraceful and shameful actions. This is my fault. I am no victim here, he said before breaking down into tears as he promised not to let his lawyer, Benjamin Braffman, down in his efforts to contribute to society. He said, do not feel bad for me. I am terribly sorry I lost your trust. You deserve far better. I was never motivated by money. I wanted to grow my stature, my reputation. I'm here because of my gross, stupid, and negligent mistakes I made. The seven-year sentence, which Shkreli listened impassively, was significantly higher than the 18-month maximum requested by defense lawyers. He has the potential to do good, citing Shkreli's intellectual brilliance and altruism toward those less fortunate than him. Which is kind of true. Like, he is very smart. And he used to have, like, a stream on Twitch where he would actually just talk about investing and stuff.
That he was convicted of. For the eighth count, she says she sentenced him to 60 months, but that's going to run concurrently with the other counts. So in effect, guys, about 6.5 years here for Martin Shkreli is the sentence. She has also ordered 3 years of supervised release on each count, which will all run concurrently. So 3 years there, guys. The judge saying she wasn't confident that the minimal sentence of 12 to 18 months, which was requested by Shkreli's attorneys, won't deter him, guys. So a seven-year sentence for Martin Shkreli, credit for time served equals 6.5 years for Martin Shkreli in these three counts he's been charged of securities fraud.
The judge came in right down the middle, right? Because the spread was somewhere 18 months to 15 years, so 7 years.
The spread? Were they voting?
That's right, Michelle. The government prosecutors had asked for no shorter than 15 years, so really splitting the difference there in the Martin Shkreli case.
When will it be determined, Meg, where he will serve this time?
All right. Well, that's too bad. I was really like, I liked that guy because he did funny things on Twitter. Once he said, if anyone will give me a strand of Hillary Clinton's hair, I'll give you $5,000. So this is pretty upsetting that we've lost a great guy. And what exactly was he in jail for? It was called securities fraud, also known as stock fraud. And investment fraud is a deceptive practice in the stock or commodities market that includes that induces investors to make purchases or sale decisions on a basis of false information. So I'm not sure what the exact thing he did was, but it was something related to investing, and he was like lying to people, kind of like that Wolf of Wall Street, right? Where he's like, you got a penny, I got a stock. You're going to make 3 pennies if you give me your stock. You got a penny, I got a stock. Chet says, is she saying guys? I don't know. What do you mean, is she saying guys? Let's go back.
Shkreli case.
When will it be determined?
Guys, so a 7-year sentence. was requested by Shkreli's attorneys won't deter him, guys. So a 7-year sentence for Martin.
Yeah, why is she saying that?
Martin Shkreli, credit for time served equals 6.5 years for Martin Shkreli in these 3 counts he's been charged of securities fraud. Back
judge,
over to
the
you.
Judge came in right down the middle, right?
All right. Fascinating story. That guy's dead. Wow, this is a very slow show so far. And by slow, I mean we're going through stuff, but I don't haven't covered anything good, but we're gonna get on to it. Here's a good one. Psychiatrist who treated patients for their homosexuality had sex with male patients in his office. Dr. Melvin Iskov's license was suspended after he was found guilty by Ontario's medical regulator. Now, this did not happen, obviously, last week. I mean, maybe he just got suspended, but this has been going on for a long time. A long-time Toronto psychiatrist who believes homosexuality is a sexual disorder that can be overcome has been found guilty by Ontario's medical regulator of sexually abusing two of his male patients. He's 72, and he was described in a decision by the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario's Discipline Committee as having a special interest in the treatment of patients with problems related to homosexuality. So, of course, let's head on over and get the actual report from the actual Canada's website. On March 8th, 2018, the Discipline Committee found that Dr. Melvin Lawrence committed an act of professional misconduct in that he engaged in sexual abuse of patients and in that he engaged in an act or omission relevant to the practice of blah, 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 blah. Let's get to the sexy stuff. The case was about allegations of sexual abuse that arose from the complaints of two men, patient A and patient B. That's weird. Isn't that weird? Like, you got born and your name was patient A and the other guy's name was patient B, and they came into the same doctor's office in that order? How weird. They'd each been long-term patients of Dr. Iskov. In addition, it was alleged that Dr. Iskov engaged in disgraceful... Blah, blah, blah. All right. Let's do this. We're going to dive right in. We're going to see what happened to patient A and patient B. Do you guys even want to know? We're going to find out, guys. Get it? Call back to... Patient A first became a patient of Dr. Iskov when... I don't even know what his name is. It's Iskov. Whatever. I'm just going to say the doctor. I'm going to say Dr. Love Robinson because that's way better. And that would be a way better name for a man taking care of patient A. When he was in his early 20s, continued to see the doctor as a patient for about 18 years. Oh my God, this story happened a long time ago. He was referred to the doctor by a psychologist to whom he had presented with depression and anxiety associated with fears that he was gay. From the outset of treatment, he was introduced to the doctor to the concepts of Dr. Edmund... Wait a minute. He was introduced by the doctor to the concepts of another doctor, Edmund Bergler. Patient A understood that homosexuality, according to Bergler, was a clinically curable condition through psychoanalysis treatment with excellent chances of cure. Oh, yeah. Patient A's appointments were initially 2 or sometimes 3 times per week, and at each appointment, he would discuss major events in his life and feelings about other people and about Dr. Iskov. At almost every appointment, there were discussions about patient A's dreams and fantasies, including fantasies that he might have had about the doctor. No! No, really? So the doctor's like, all right. So, we are going to cure your homosexuality. Now, please tell me, in detail, all of your factual fantasies. And the doctor goes, oh yeah, keep telling me your fantasies. And he's like, get it out. Get out your fantasies. Get out your fantasies. sorry. Even if the patient did not spontaneously refer to fantasies about the doctor would directly ask about the fantasies related to him. Tell me about your fantasies about me. I gotta cure you from homosexuality. The patient understood from the doctor that he was the only psychiatrist who was available to discuss and treat these fantasies and that the doctor was the only available source for this sort of help. The doctor also cautioned patient A that he should not talk to other people about the therapy because they would not be able to understand the basis for it. During their doctor-patient relationship, the patient admired the doctor and considered him as a father figure. He felt free to call him at any point and felt he could rely on the doctor's advice about almost every aspect of his life. However, the doctor's inquiries about his fantasies and... The doctor's inquiries about his fantasies about him made him feel uncomfortable. Holy crap, Jesus. And talking about his sexual fantasies was associated with a lot of shame. Patient A at times felt pressure to respond in a way that he thought Dr. Iskov expected and would say that he thought Dr. Iskov wanted to hear. What the? What? On a date between the end of 2011 and the beginning of 2002, Dr. Iskov offered patient A a hug at the end of an appointment. Wow. Holy crap. We're going to have a whole incident about a hug. Patient A accepted, and Dr. Iskov walked around his desk, and they embraced. This recurred on two or three... I thought he was going to say, and I felt his stiff, stiff breadstick. This occurred on two or three appointments, during which Dr. Iskov would ask, "What are you thinking you want to do?" And subsequently said, "You may touch me if you like." Patient A then touched Dr. Iskov's erect penis, yes, through Dr. Iskov's trousers. The sexual activity subsequently progressed to Dr. Iskov removing his penis from his trousers, then patient A doing the same. This progressed on later occasions to mutual masturbation and oral sex. Patient A estimated that such activity occurred between 10 and 20 occasions, with oral sex occurring on one-third of the episodes. That's not true. 10 or 20 does not go into 3 evenly. Liar! On one occasion only, patient A remembered removing his clothes. So, for the most part, it was just the breadstick out of the trousers. Patient A was... I didn't know that they would get the Chaz's nice reaction. I didn't know that he was going to... They were going to jump right to erect penis through his trousers. Patient A... It was shocking. Patient A was uncertain about how and when the sexual activity ended. He believed it ended when he told Dr. Iskov he did not want it to continue. Patient continued to see him as a patient after the sexual activity ended. What the frick? All right. One day, patient A awoke with pain and called Dr. Iskov, who took him to the hospital. Patient A had surgery. In addition, emails between Dr. Iskov and patient A referred to other subjects, including photographs of a trundle bed. What's a trundle bed? A series of photographs of oriental rugs. And even, oh, this is stupid. I'm trying to find more information about erect penis. All right. So anyway, the point is they continue the relationship a little bit. But Dr. Iskov and the boundaries within the doctor-patient relationship was seriously eroded. All right. Let's go on to patient B. We're only halfway through this fun. This is great. Patient B became a patient of Dr. Iskov in his late teenage years and saw Dr. Iskov as a patient. For over 20 years, his parents had recommended that he see the doctor. For his feelings of depression and anxiety, patient B denied having any concerns about his own sexuality before seeing the doctor. Okay, so he said, "Mother and father, I am depressed and anxious, but I am straight." Throughout his therapy with the doctor, patient B was encouraged to read material by Dr. Burglar again. And was aware that he was on the this was on the basis of his treatment. According to the patient, Dr. Iskov raised the issue of patient B's feelings about homosexuality at every appointment. "Are you sure you're not into the gays?" Even though he did not think of himself as gay and had no physical relationships with other men. Patient B developed a trusting relationship with the doctor. He relied on the doctor to make decisions for him and found the doctor to be very helpful in advising him. For example, in avoiding self-destructive behavior with alcohol. Maybe I need one of those guys. Patient B also felt that the doctor was supportive and helpful in his desire to further his career. As a consequence, he wanted to impress the doctor and show himself to be a good patient. Although he was reluctant to disclose details at first, he concluded that it was easier to respond to these requests from the doctor and fully engage in analysis of his fantasies. Oh boy, all right, here we go. Dr. Iskov would ask at almost every appointment whether patient B was having fantasies about Dr. Iskov himself. Patient B replied that he did have fantasies about the doctor and that these made patient B feel uncomfortable. He expressed this discomfort to Dr. Iskov without taking any other action. He felt that he needed to continue to see the doctor because of an emotional dependence on the doctor as a therapist. Here we go. At some point in 2007, patient B and Dr. Iskov began engaging in sexual activity. Come on! More details. There were about 12 episodes of sexual contact, when the patient started to believe that he was homosexual and discussed with Dr. Izkov's thoughts of beginning a homosexual affair with an unspecified male. Dr. Izkov persuaded him that a random partner was undesirable and made it known that he himself would be available. No. If you're gay, you do not go to Craigslist. You go to here. Get out that erect pain. Oh my God, I lost my spot because I started yelling. Sorry, he himself would be available. Patient B described Dr. Izkov coming around his desk to the patient's side and initiating mutual handling of each other's penis through their clothes. On subsequent occasions, the contact progressed to mutual oral sex with both parties ejaculating. On one or two occasions, they removed their shirts. I feel like that's a... I feel like once you're already ejaculating, it's like, and how many times did you remove your shirt? One or two occasions. Okay. Like, does that even matter? And how many times did you remove your right sock? On one visit, patient B brought a condom with him and asked Dr. Izkov to penetrate him anally, which Dr. Izkov did. Ugh. The final three episodes occurred at Dr. Izkov's house after Dr. Izkov suggested they meet there. After patient B ended the sexual activity with Dr. Izkov, there was a gap of several years in the doctor-patient relationship, but patient B went back to him with concerns about his response to the death of a family member. Blah, blah, blah. They also exchanged emails, and it's really weird. Like, they go into the details of the sex, and then they go back to, like, on both these occasions, they go back to, like, oh... they're talking about emails. Like, here's some emails about how to buy a juicer. The doctor sold a juicer to patient B. All right. So anyway, the doctor has been suspended for taking off his shirt one or two times. I believe that that was the straw that broke that camel's thing. Five people have died after a helicopter crashed into New York City's East River and flipped upside down in the water, Sunday night, fire officials said. Only the pilot survived. The New York City Fire Department had earlier said that two of six people were blah, blah, blah. So here's some video.
The harness system that they have set up for us, that it was very hard to extract ourselves from the helicopter in an emergency.
That was not one of the people who died, surprisingly. So a helicopter goes down, it is flying over New York, and all of a sudden, it's like, we don't have a engine anymore.
Fairleigh Motel, mayday, mayday, mayday.
Fairleigh Motel, are you okay?
East River, engine failure.
Just word from LaGuardia Tower, the helicopter has gone down in the East River, so AC and patrol responding.
This is really awful, because the helicopter crashed, like lost its engine, landed in the river, and then flipped over. But the crash was not like strong enough to have killed anyone. So they all were just trapped in their seatbelts, and the thing flipped over. Very bad. But what this guy was saying in this other video was that the way they have the harnesses set up is that it's like a professional harness, and unless you're trained on undoing it, you can't take off your seatbelt.
The harness system that they have set up for us, that it was very hard to extract ourselves from the helicopter in an emergency.
I don't know why they got Minecraft music going on behind this.
When it's cold and you're disoriented and possibly injured from the landing. So there are a lot of things going on.
So they're looking into the harness system. That's it. Helicopter crashed. New York woman charged with after video surfaces of unattended 9-month-old crawling in a busy roadway. A woman from upstate New York was charged with child endangerment after a video surfaced showing her 9-month child crawling around. Charged with endangering the welfare of a child. The video was posted to Facebook and also showed several people attending to the child. Police launched an investigation shortly after learning about the video. After hours of searching, police were finally able to track down Ford. She said that she was not sure how the child ended up in the street. She said she was with a relative and they were in a vehicle and the infant was secured in the rear seat. But shortly after, when she turned back to look, she saw that the child was no longer there. Ford and the unidentified relative returned to their original location where they recovered the child. So you're driving along. How's little Leticia? Oh, she's not there. Oh, niggas. Edit that out. But she, they're like, uh-oh, where's the baby? And they're like, oh, remember we took her out and we put her in the road, but we were like, don't forget to pick her up, and then we did. So here's the video.
What's the matter?
Not a baby.
You're okay. Did you call 911?
So there's two guys, and they're talking to each other, and one of them is like petting the baby. It's like, you're okay.
Okay. Did you call 911?
You can call 911.
Dominic, I got a blanket in the back of the car.
Is this yours?
Yeah,
the
Dominic,
right here. I got a blanket in the car.
Get the blanket. Okay. Oh, my God. They're still leaving it. No one's picking it up. They're just leaving it there, which I guess is smart. Like, what if it's got an injury?
Oh,
no, someone's picking it up.
Baby in the street. This is what we do in Utica now.
Did you call?
I love being able to pull up the original video. Baby in the street, just is what we do in Utica.
911.
Yeah.
You didn't call him?
I'll call him now. Damn, man.
I want to see what they say to 911.
That's what we do now. Baby in the street.
Yeah, bring it over here, huh?
That's what people do now, you feel me? Leaving the kids in the street.
This guy's shocked. He can't believe it. So this is the craziest thing he's ever seen. To be fair, it probably is like one of the... It probably is the craziest thing he's ever seen. But he's pointing the camera at himself. We live in babies in the street. No.
Living the kids in the street?
I was driving and...
That's my baby. Oh, my God.
Wow. During the video, the mom comes up. That's crazy. However, I think she has to prove it. You can't just be coming down the street and claim street baby, right? That could be someone else's street baby.
I was driving and...
That's my baby. Oh, my God.
The guy just sighs. I wish he should have kept recording that lady. Oh, my God. That's my baby. Like, how could you even tell? The family of a sixth grade South Haven middle school student confirmed he took his life Tuesday, March 6th, after being bullied. Cheryl Hudson, the mother of a 12-year-old Andrew Leach, tells us her son killed himself over continuous bullying. She says he left a note for his family and then hung himself. I haven't been able to find the note, unfortunately. Hudson also says bullying runs rampant in the South Haven Middle School. A few years ago, there was a young girl who hung herself from a water tower due to bullying. There have been several attempts since then with other kids. When asked if she ever spoke to school officials about the bullying, she said, I only spoke with the school's sixth grade principal. I didn't know how to handle it. His dad did talk to the teacher one time, but from what we were hearing, there was a group of kids that would go around calling him fat, ugly, and worthless. The family says law enforcement is investigating. I've got a follow-up story. His parents say he killed himself after harmful bullying at the Southern blah, blah, blah. He was a very loving young boy, blah, blah, blah. I guess I was just oblivious to it. He just always seemed happy behind the smile. His father, Matt Leach, said Andy was questioning himself. He was struggling a lot internally with sexual orientation. He finally came out with the information at school that he thought he may be bisexual. I think that really amped up the bullying. And then the unthinkable happened after school Tuesday, March 6th. We found notes that told us of his plan. His older brother was the only one home. They found him dead from suicide in the outdoor garage. Since then, that is not a real thing. Outdoor garage. Since then, they said they learned more about what the 12-year-old was dealing with at school. Kids were telling him, we're going to put your hands on you. We're not going to let you make it out of the bathroom. Things in that nature. First of all, that makes them gay. Right? Please waterboard me with your pee. I want them to know what they've done. And now that makes no sense. If anyone just heard me yell that and doesn't know the context, that makes no sense. I just want them to know what they've done and how it affects other people. They don't think their son knew about the National Suicide Hotline or other local resources. First of all, yeah. Hey, parents of the dead child. Did your son know, we're taking a poll here of all suicides. Did your son know of the National Suicide Hotline? We don't think so. Well, had he known, he would be still alive. I don't think... The National Suicide Hotline, first of all, we should call it, but we shouldn't because I mean, there's a line you don't cross with quote-unquote prank calls. Even though I don't prank call, I informationally call things and people and places. However, we would not call the suicide hotline and take up their time being like, what do you guys even do? But on the other hand, if you're someone and you tell someone else to call the suicide hotline, you're basically going, I don't want to talk to you. However, I got this 800 number and you probably will live if you call it. If you think there's any chance of your child suffering from depression, their grades are drastically changing, their eating habits or sleeping habits change, then get in their business. Talk to them. Ooh. So anyway, well, this is, I mean, his first mistake was being bisexual, right? His second mistake was being a little fat with that stupid hair. And his third mistake was telling anyone he thinks he's bisexual. This is the problem with the liberal media these days. They're like, it's okay to be a freaking tranny and be bi. No. If you tell anyone that stuff, you're going to have to commit suicide. The liberal media should not be telling people to come out with this. Hide it inside. Bottle it up. It's the safest place for that. Otherwise, you turn into this kid with these squinty eyes, this hair from Rugrats. And he's like, I'm bi. He doesn't even know what a bi or a tri is. Lesbian, gay, bi, tri, quad. Investigation underway after Miami Beach Club caught horsing around. Miami Beach Club has lost his license and a criminal case may come from a stunt involving a horse. Chad says, yeah, don't come out as a 12-year-old. Wait a minute. Hang on, don't come out as bi as a 12-year-old, or just in general, don't come out as a 12-year-old. Excuse me, I'm 12? Kill yourself! That is actually true. Like, if you're on Call of Duty or something on the internet, do not come out as a child if you're playing online. Chat says, whenever you try autoerotic asphyxiation, always write a suicide note just in case. That's funny. I killed myself because I was gay. Yeah, you can leave at least you can leave behind a legacy. Not I killed myself because I was jerking to gay. Authorities have since located the horse. Sorry. Okay. Miami Beach Club has lost his license and a criminal case may come from a stunt involving a horse. Authorities have since located the horse and deemed it to be healthy and safe. But at the Mokai Club late Wednesday night, or early Thursday morning, a horse carrying a man and a woman in a string bikini was led into a crowded nightclub. Here's the video. That is a thing of Heisenberg. What is going on? Okay, so it's a vertical video from inside the club. It is pretty dark. So a girl in like a bikini rides in on a horse, and then the horse is like, oh my God, I'm surrounded by idiots. I'm in a club. Get me out of here. It starts freaking out a little bit. It could have easily trampled people. And now everyone's just very happy. And then the video just repeats. However, the police are not very happy about this. It's a horse. A real horse, a woman's voice can be heard to exclaim on a cell phone video. Someone posted a video on Facebook which showed the horse's entrance. The white horse, out of its element and appearing uncomfortable, took a nasty spill on the club's hard floor, knocking the woman off its back. People could be heard screaming, stunned, as the animal struggled to get back to its feet. The handler then tries to maneuver it out of the crowd. The video reached the Miami Beach Police, who issued a statement which read, "We are very concerned over the allegations and such. We have launched a joint investigation with the Miami Beach Code Enforcement." Later Friday, cops doubled down. Oh, okay. So they were playing blackjack. We're looking at this from all angles now. We're looking at it from a city, blah, blah, blah. So they're very mad. A horse went into a bar. They're like, was that allowed? Is there animal cruelty at play? Was the girl underage? I don't think that's part of it, but. Wow, club people be dumb. Yeah, that's what I was saying. The horse was like, oh my God, I'm in a club. Everyone's an idiot. Get me out. Teacher accidentally fires gun in classroom. Students injured. Oh, hey, this video is not working because it's only playing in my right ear, which is only it's not recording properly. A teacher accidentally fired a pistol inside a California classroom while lecturing about public safety and injured three students, according to police. Dennis Alexander was pointing the gun at the ceiling when he inadvertently fired it Tuesday at Seaside High School. Bullet fragments ricocheted off the building and hit a 17-year-old student in the neck. The teen's father, Furman Gonzalez, said he rushed his son to the hospital after the 17-year-old returned from school with blood on his shirt and a neck injury. Huh? So hang on. So he was at school. The teacher shot the gun. It hit him on the neck. And he's like, oh, I'm shot in the neck. And they're like, okay, sorry about that gun incident now. 2 + 2 = 4. And they did the rest of the day. And then the kid goes home and is like, oh, Dad, I got shot in the neck. And the dad's like, whoa, let's go to the hospital. He's shaken up, but he's going to be okay. I'm just pretty upset that no one told us anything, and we had to call the police ourselves to report it. What? That doesn't make any sense. Two other students were also injured by debris, but police said all their injuries are minor. This guy also serves as a resource officer for the Sand City Police. Oh, of course. So yeah, he's also a cop. The police department and school district placed Alexander on administrative leave while investigating whether he was legally allowed to have the gun on campus. How about, doesn't matter whether you're legally allowed to have the gun, you shot the gun. Now, I don't know much about gun rules, but I thought the rule was if you have a gun and you accidentally shoot it, you automatically become unqualified to ever have a gun. Armed school staff, the teachers get guns, librarians get guns with suppressors, the chat says. Yes, we get it. We've seen it on Facebook for 2 weeks. By the way, I'm not pro-arming teachers. I'm pro, if they want to have a gun, sure, maybe. I mean, again, if they prove that they're a responsible owner. I don't know. It's not. This is not a political show, but it is because I start yelling sometimes. Well, oh, so this week I had to go to Redbox to get a movie. I didn't have to go, but I did go. And it's always the awkwardest when you get there and you look at the Redbox and there's two people standing in front of the Redbox. And you don't know how long they're going to be. Because the thing with the Redbox is you got to browse it and you got to look for what's on it. Unless you go to the website and then you just check what's available. Which is actually pretty amazing. I guess it's not all that amazing, the technology, that you can go to the website and you can see what's at each box around you. But it is pretty cool that each box has enough connectivity to send it back to the database. Which then the website note. Actually, when I think about it, it's actually very simple. So now I'm depressed. Anyway, the point is, so there's two people at the red box, and I'm like, oh my God, they're going to be forever. So I walk toward the red box, and I go, what are we getting? I stand right next to him, and I look at the screen, like, what are we getting? I'm like, we don't know. And I'm like, okay, take your time. And they go, and then, like, a couple seconds after I stand there, the girl, like, picks something. And I'm like, don't let me rush you. She's like, it's okay, we'll watch Baywatch. I'm like, seriously, I got all night. And she's like, okay, no, it's good. Bye. So I super made some, I'm pretty sure I super made some Redbox people uncomfortable by standing right next to it. All right, well, that is all the news stories I have. So we are going to end the show here. It's been a little under an hour, so we're good. However, let's talk about the website for a second. At newswithnick.com is the new website. So I'm going to browse over to it on the video version of the stream. And by the way, if you don't have, if you're not looking at the video version, check it out at newswithnick.com. Click on episodes, and then every episode we've done is there. If there is a video version available, it is also there. I've not put the video version behind a paywall or anything yet. You can listen to the most recent episode where I talked to Andrew about my grandpa. Now, there's another page here called Race Results. So if you want to read some information about how my running races have gone, I am posting every time I race, and I'm putting a quick update here. So, for example, winning the San Pascal Valley 10K trail race. There was a half marathon option as well, but it was up a mountain, and I hate running up mountains. So I didn't sign up for that one. Plus, all the good runners can do that one. This was the inaugural race at this location, but I looked up results from other locations of the same series and found that the competition was not terribly high, so I knew I'd be running close to the front. Within the first quarter mile, one other runner and I opened a gap with third place. I let him lead for a while to judge the pace and the terrain, and my watch clicked 3 minutes as we passed mile marker 1. Now, it didn't really click because it's digital. Now, This is a groomed trail with some narrow areas, so some portions aren't too terribly easy to pass in. However, after hanging in second for about 1.75 miles, we got to a passing section, and I figured I could probably take the lead and see about starting to pull away, which is what I did. In addition to there being surprisingly no race officials at the turnaround point, which means someone could just cut it by turning early, which is true. So for the 10K, you ran 3.1 miles out, 3.1 miles back, and there was this big sign that said, 10K turnaround here. So I went to it, and I was like, there's no race official. Nobody's watching to make sure I go all the way. So I just tag it, and then I run back. Also, the out and back course can be a bit awkward because you're now running on already narrow trail past people that are coming in the other direction. I extended the lead throughout the second half, and I finished in first by about 45 seconds in 38 minutes and 47 seconds. I said I always have a little imposter syndrome when I win a race. So what actually happened at this race, I didn't talk about it too much, is I finished, and I'm looking around. I'm like, hey, where's my parent? Like, I won. Like, the Nick Ryder, Keene, New Hampshire, is our champion as I'm finishing the race. I'm looking around like, where's my parents? Hopefully someone got that on video. And then they come at walking down the path, and I go, nice job, guys. And they go, what? And I was like, I thought you meant, like, she didn't understand how clocks work. She thought I started at a different time than I started, and when she did her math of when the race would finish, it was wrong. So she didn't even come to see. But whatever. Someone right at the end goes, how do you feel? Good job. How do you feel? I'm like, oh, I'm going to throw up. But anyway, you can check out a pic of me finishing the race over there. Oh, I should put the other pic that they got of me in the race on the thing. I look awful. Well, first of all, it's hard to take a good running photo when you're running. Anyway, head on over to newswithnick.com, get race info, get episode info, get all the archives that I've done. Tomorrow is the 3-year anniversary of News with Nick, believe it or not. The first ever episode I did that I titled News with Nick happened 3 years ago in March. Now, if only I could figure out how to work the website so that you could click easily back into the history, that would be great. I just don't know how to do that. That's actually a good point. Like, if I go to episodes and I scroll to the bottom, I can click older posts. So that's easy enough. The problem is I don't have a page that's just like click here to browse to a certain month. So maybe I'll figure that out at some point. But all right. This has been News with Nick. Thanks for coming out, everybody. And check out the PCL at pukeandthegang.com as well. Right, everyone? Cool.